Dog Works Radio Network presents Mushing Radio, hosted by Robert Forto. Mushing Radio is about dog-powered sports, living in the Great White North, and mushing. Visit our website at mushingradio.com. Here is your host, Robert Forto.
Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Michelle Forto standing in once again for our wonderful host, Robert, while he's out on the trail teaching leadership on the expedition out there. With me tonight again is Alex Stein. How are you doing, Alex?
I'm doing great, Michelle.
It's been a really nice day today
in Southern California. Not too hot, but warm enough that makes me appreciate the fact that I'm able to stay warm without too much effort. You know, as opposed to not so much right now, but as opposed to the way it's been on the Iditarod Trail, especially early in the race.
You know, what did you wear today? Just like a jeans and a t-shirt with maybe a sweatshirt or a light jacket?
Actually, I wore jeans and a denim button-down shirt and I no jacket because it was actually I think
pretty
in
warm.
The high 70s today. So it was
wow.
Very nice and warm. Had no real need for any of that, any covering, any sweatshirts, anything like that. And, of course, I have a lot of friends on the East Coast who are, you know, battening down the hatches and getting ready for their storm that's going to supposedly strike them with a vengeance in the next day or so. And I noticed on some of the video that it seemed to be snowing a little bit, not too much, but a little bit in Unalakleet and places like that. So it's nice to have a little bit of winter weather on the Iditarod Trail, although not enough that it was, you know, as windy as it has been in the past, and not enough that it was really a serious problem for any of the teams.
Right. And so just to put a little perspective out there, 35 degrees high here today in Willow, and I wore basically the same thing as Alex. I have on a light sweater and a pair of jeans. So that kind of puts it into perspective about what 35 degrees feels like in spring here in Alaska compared to 70 degrees in Southern California. Almost feels about the same.
Well, you know, also, you're a lot tougher than I am, and my blood has thinned considerably. You know, I have friends in Alaska who pride themselves on never wearing coats, never wearing like parkas or jackets until it gets below zero. And, you know, I admire that in a way, but I also think it's a little bit extreme.
A little bit extreme. So I think that snow and Unalakleet is an awesome and welcome thing for the mushers and the dogs as well. Anybody knows that fresh snow always lifts your spirit, unless it's blizzard-like, which is what they're having on the East Coast. So we are going to go into this. I understand there's a lot of stories going on today.
Yeah, so just diving into this, Mitch Seavey is now out of Elam. Mitch has really been completely dominating this race, and it's actually kind of an amazing thing to watch. Mitch's strategy in the past day or so seems to be that he will get to where he wants to rest, which has been at checkpoints pretty much, and then he'll stay there until one of the other teams comes in, and then he'll just go. And he's been, I think, staying longer in some of these checkpoints than we might have expected him to stay. But to make up for that, his speed when he's been out on the trail has just been astonishing. He's been looking at the tracker, you know, regularly he's been between 9 and 10 miles per hour, and sometimes he's been traveling at close to 10 miles per hour for, you know, for almost an hour at a time. and that this late into the race, that's kind of extraordinary. The other amazing thing that's going on is Nick Pettit, who is currently in second, is pretty much the only person whose last name isn't Seavey who has a chance of winning this race at this point. Obviously, there's still a little over 100 miles to go at the front, so anything could happen. But Mitch has been so dominant that it looks like if anyone is going to catch him, it's going to be Nick. Now, Nick has been traveling at considerably slower speeds. He's been, you know, he has been going between 7.5 and 8 miles per hour most of the time, sometimes a little bit higher, but that's generally been how he's traveling compared to between 9 and 10 for Mitch. So he's been able to hang on to having a shot at taking the lead by resting less. And while that's certainly something that you can do over the short term, the real danger is that at some point your dogs are just burned out and you've got nothing left in the tank, and either your dogs will just completely slow down to the point where they're barely moving, or in some cases they will just stop and say, no, we've had enough, we have to rest for a while.
Well, you know, I'm going to say a couple of things here too. Right now, Nick is sitting with 13 dogs and Mitch is sitting with 12, you know, but you can't really go by, oh, well, Nick's got more dogs, so he's going to be able to finish stronger. It really comes down to the age, experience, health of the whole team, because one dog can throw off the whole team, and, you know, that comes into play. I'm sitting here looking at Nick, and he's 40 minutes behind Mitch, and that's a pretty good amount of time. Also, I see on here Jesse Royer. She's still got 16 dogs, and she's, you know, in Koyuk. So that's an extraordinary feat all on its own.
Yeah, I saw an interview with Jesse that's up on the Insider now, where she was talking about, you know, everyone keeps saying that, well, she's got 16 dogs, so she'll be able to go faster, which, as you pointed out, is not always the case. You really can only go as fast as your slowest dog. But the fact that she has 16 dogs does give her a few more options, and she had said that she was considering going through Elam without really stopping at all and making the run directly up to White Mountain. Because she has so many dogs, she can take more food with her in case she needs to stop on the trail. And also, if she has a dog that is not doing all that well, that she could just drop a dog in Elam if she wanted to. But then she said that all of her dogs are doing really, really well, and so she doesn't see a reason to drop a dog just so that she'll have fewer dogs. And, you know, for people who have followed the Iditarod for a while, they know that it is fairly unusual to get this far into the race or conceivably even finish the race with all 16 dogs. It says a lot about, you know, some things that are within your control and some things that aren't. It certainly speaks to good dog care and to good management and selecting the right group of 16 dogs, but it also speaks to things that you can't control as much, like being able to avoid, you know, viruses that are passed around sometimes at checkpoints, being able to, you know, have all your dogs be happy and healthy and not have minor problems like sore wrists that would often cause you to drop your dog. So it is a pretty extraordinary thing that Jesse has so many dogs. And I think a lot of the people who are still a little bit in front of her, you know, especially people like Wade Mars, who's currently about 3 miles ahead of her, and Yor, who's about 20, almost 30 miles ahead of her, they've got to be wondering if they have enough gas in their tank that they can stay ahead of her.
Well, you know, I'm looking here, and it's showing that she's running pretty darn fast. She's averaging 8.5 miles an hour, and Yor is only averaging 5.5 miles an hour. Again, it's not about how many dogs at this point, but more about how healthy your dogs are at this point. And if she's able to maintain that 8 mile an hour average speed, she's going to pass Yor pretty soon.
Yeah.
You know, with a checkpoint at least. Wade is running the same speed as Jesse is with less dogs, which means he's probably running a lighter load in his sled at this point because he's running less dogs. And I think that he's going to give Dallas a run for his money for second, because Dallas is running pretty slow at 5.5 miles an hour. I don't see him catching his dad this year.
No, I don't see that either. And it's interesting because if you see the interviews with Dallas, he is not as cocky as he usually is. And usually, even when he's farther back in the pack, he has this confidence and this sense that he knows exactly what to do to overtake people and win. I don't hear that in what he's saying this year. And I think it's probably a combination he's had some physical problems. There was a picture of his arm, which just looked very, very bad and painful. And I think he's probably not had his dogs perform to the level that they have in the past, you know, 3 or 4 years. They're still doing great. And you know, that's why he's still as high up in the standings as he is. But I agree. I do not see him being able to pull it out and win this year.
Well, right. But, you know, I think, and so Dallas was a little farther north than us, and, you know, I like the competition, I like the camaraderie in their family, and I like to see them kind of poke at each other a little bit, because that's kind of how my family is. But Dallas is quite young. He's got quite a few more Iditarods in him compared to where his dad's at. And I think that they'll just continue on and you know, keep moving this sport into the direction that they're moving it. Is making it, you know, much more efficient is one thing, but it's really cool to see the different designs they, you know, come up with for their sleds ever so often. But I'm thinking Jessie Royer is a surprise for me this year. I really did not see her being in that position, so I'm happy for her.
Yeah, and you know, I always root for the female mushers. In the past few years, I have Allie Zirkel to win the race, which I think just proves that I should not be allowed to make predictions. But Jessie is really yeah, Jessie is really just a remarkable musher who I think is going to do extremely, extremely well in the next 3 or 4 years. So jumping into a couple of the other things that we've been looking at today, there was a second dog in the flight with Smoke, the dog who perished from hyperthermia, who had been hospitalized. That dog was released today and is going to be fine. We talked a little bit last night about some of the changes that the Iditarod was making for the transportation of dogs, and I'm not sure we ever specified what they were, but my understanding is the big one is that dogs will not be transported on the planes back to Anchorage or wherever they're going wearing blankets or coats. And also the planes are directed now to be kept at a cooler temperature. I don't know that this is the case, but I was thinking to some of the times when I've been in Alaska and have come out of a very, very cold area and gotten into a car and just blasted the heat. So if you were a pilot coming out of an area where it was cold and wanted to have more heat to make yourself more comfortable, that could be something that would be very dangerous for the dogs. so they're directing the pilots not to do that in the future.
Right. And the, you know, when the dogs have on those coats, it's like you wearing a fur coat out there in LA today at 70 degrees with a fur coat on. You know, it's extremely hot and they don't breathe well in those coats because they're to keep the warmth in. So I don't know if I agree necessarily with all of the precautions as far as not flying them out. Some of them need to be flown out because of injuries and it's faster to get them out that way. But I mean, that's kind of an iffy thing. I bet you by next year, they'll still be flying them out. They'll just be making sure that the coats aren't on the dogs.
I think they're still planning on continuing to fly them out, just making sure that the conditions in the planes are, you know, more conducive, more for the dogs' comfort and less necessarily for the pilot's comfort.
Right, right. Well, and, you know, my goodness, a pilot could take a look over his shoulder every few minutes and make sure that they're all right, you know.
Right, right. And also the pilot can put on an extra coat or a sweater or something. So also we had another scratch today. Dave Branholm scratched in Caltag. He was running the dogs for Mushing mortician Scott Jansen, who had to pull out of the race relatively recently because of medical issues. Dave said that he scratched because of concern for his own safety. He had been fairly frostbitten in the early part of the race and was just having a lot of difficulties with that, so did not feel that it was safe for him to continue. Obviously, we wish him the best, and it's too bad that he's not going to be able to make it to Nome. But you know, you have to take care of yourself so that you'll be able to take care of the dogs.
Right. Well, and frostbite's a pretty serious condition. I mean, we've all heard about how badly Lance Mackey has dealt with frostbite, and even Didi Genro. And when it comes to a point where you cannot physically maneuver your own hands to put a booty on and off a dog or unhook a dog or, you know, even get into your sled bag because you can't move your fingers anymore, those are some serious situations. So hopefully he's on the mend, and I agree with his decision on that. I mean, you always want to be able to take care of yourself, because if you can't take care of yourself, you cannot take care of those dogs.
Yeah, and just before we got on air, I saw a notice of this, which is another very sad thing involving an Iditarod dog. As people may know, newer fans may not quite be aware of this. What happens when a dog is dropped on the trail is it's usually flown back to Anchorage, where the dogs are cared for and kept behind the Lakefront Hotel, which is the Iditarod headquarters hotel in Anchorage. And there are volunteers who are specifically trained to do that, and there are vets who come and look after the dogs. And they stay there until generally they are picked up the same day by either a handler or an authorized representative of the team. So today we learned that there was a dog named Groovy, who was a 3-year-old male from John Baker's team, who had been flown back to Anchorage and was picked up by the handler on Saturday and apparently got loose at the handler's home and was reported to animal control in Anchorage as being missing and was hit by a vehicle on Northern Lights Boulevard and killed. So, it's not a dog dying on the trail, but it's a very sad thing when a dog dies. And as people who are from outside Alaska may not realize, Anchorage is still a big city, and there are a lot of cars, and cars plus dogs running around is not a happy combination.
No, that's absolutely unfortunate. It's absolutely unfortunate. I know a lot of the mushers like to use some of us out here in Willow that aren't on Iditarod, and they will house their dogs out here in Willow with us. But, you know, a lot of them, their handlers, John Baker's handler is probably staying at a friend's house in Anchorage, and, you know, because they live in Cox. So it's,
right,
you know, not set up as a dog yard. And sled dogs, they don't house well. They don't backyard well. They are used to being on drop chains with dog houses, but they don't do backyards too well. They climb fences, they jump over, and they run out front doors. So I can imagine it's difficult to maintain a sled dog in a regular house.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, as much as dogs are dogs, sled dogs, especially sled dogs who, you know, have trained and have run a bunch of races and are running long-distance races like Iditarod, are a special, you know, subset of dogs. And it's not, you know, it's just not reasonable to think of your pet dog, your lap dog, who is, you know, by your side at the couch as being the same type of animal with the same behavior as these dogs.
Right. These are working dogs. I hate to say it, but they're comparable to racehorses. You wouldn't take your six-year-old child to go ride a racehorse for the first time. You're going to take them to the little pony carousel at the fair where those ponies only ride in a circle, and that's what they do because they're tame and they're, you know, they're going to be slow and safe. So that's how you can compare it. It's basically you wouldn't put your kid on a racehorse. So you wouldn't expect a racing sled dog to be cool in a house. So, yeah. Alex, we're at about 7.5 minutes.
Okay. Just one more really quick story, and then we'll jump into the musher profile for the day. There was a great article in ADN today about Jeff King, who said that this is probably going to be among his worst Iditarod finishes ever. He's not doing well or competitively, but he is having a great time on the trail and is happy not having realized he's not going to win the race. He's very happy just taking time, not rushing as much as he usually does, stopping to meet people and talk to people. He said he's even apologized to mushers that he's been rude to in the past. And there was a great quote in the article. It said, "What a shame to be in such a hurry to finish 15th instead of 20th that you would miss a chance to meet someone you've always admired on the trail." And, you know, I was thinking that Martin Boozer had a very similar reaction in 2015 when the restart was in Fairbanks as well, when he realized that he was not going to be competitive and decided that he was going to take time to visit with people in all of the villages, and said that it really had been a remarkable experience, even though he did not, you know, even though he was not competitive.
You know, I think that is really awesome, and it really puts some things into perspective for people that sometimes if you're not in the top 20, but you're still not lagging behind and causing yourself to be non-competitive, you might as well go ahead and slow down, meet some people, enjoy yourself. It's beautiful out there, and part of that is the experience.
Absolutely. Okay, so let's jump right into the musher profile for the day.
Okay.
Today's musher profile is Catherine Keith. This is her fourth race. She finished 31st last year, scratched in 2015, finished 32nd in 2014. She's currently doing extremely well. She's right now in 16th place, and it looks like she is on track to have possibly a top 15 finish, and almost certainly a top 20 finish, which is just fantastic. She was born in Minnesota, lived there until she completed high school. She wanted to be an archaeologist, spent summers working on digs in places like Pompeii. She also was a rock climber, climbed Devil's Tower and the Needles. She hiked the Pacific Crest Trail solo in 1998. She had a brief marriage to her high school sweetheart that ended, and she had, according to an ESPN article, some issues with depression at the time and with drinking too much and really just wanted to change her life. And she dreamed about going to Alaska. So at the age of 21, she bought an old ice cream truck for $500 because it had enough room in the back where she could put a bed. And she drove that from Minnesota up to Alaska. And she landed in Seward and talked her way into a job as a kayak guide, even though she'd never been on a kayak before. And her boss let her park the ice cream truck in the parking lot and live there. And when that season ended, she saw a notice in a coffee shop for a job as a dog handler on a glacier. And then she did that for a while. And when winter came, she got a job in Kotzebue handling for Ed Eitan and sold the ice cream truck for $2,000, which is a nice profit. She met and fell in love with a guy she met in Kotzebue. They built a log cabin 20 miles outside of town, which was only accessible by boat or snow machine. They had a baby who tragically died when he was 1 month old. And then her husband died the next year because he was trying to take a neighbor across the ice on an airboat that crashed. They had another child, and she decided again that she really needed to make a big change in her life. So she moved to Fairbanks with her young daughter, enrolled in college. She became an EMT, got her pilot's license, and designed her own interdisciplinary degree in renewable energy engineering with the idea of being able to go out into the bush and help villagers bring down the cost of energy, which is very, very high in bush Alaska. She then started working on training and nutrition and studied nutritional science. Met John Baker while they were both ice fishing in 2011, and they started dating, and now they share a kennel with over 40 dogs. She started racing dogs in 2012 and completed enough races to qualify for the Iditarod in 2014. She and John own several businesses, including one called Remote Solutions, which goes into rural Alaska to help villages and individuals meet energy needs with renewable energy. She's completed an Ironman triathlons all over the world. She founded this nonprofit called ACT, Alaskans Changing Together, to promote wellness in the villages. And last year, as part of the ACT on the Trail initiative, they handed out hundreds of toothbrushes to kids on the trail. And this year they have team members following the Iditarod so that they can meet with community members in all of the villages and discuss what they need and how ACT can work with them in the coming years to help them do what they need to do. This year she ran the Yukon Quest and was Rookie of the Year. She said she kept falling asleep, and she would drop her ski pole, and then she would stop and go back and get it. And as soon as she got back to the ski pole, her dogs would start running, and then they'd run about 20 feet, and they'd stop, and they would do this over and over again. And she said she thought it was their way of trying to cheer her up and just mess with her. She she and John Baker are engaged, and last year they had a bet that whichever one of them finished higher in Iditarod would be able to choose their wedding date. And John Baker finished higher, but she said that he has yet to set the wedding date. So if she finishes higher than him this year, she's going to set it for him and not wait for him. She's awesome. a really just remarkable woman, and one of these people that you can only describe with the word badass, because she does consulting and coaching for fitness and nutrition with private clients and with people all over all over Alaska and all over the world. And, you know, she said that she was hoping for a top 15 finish, but has been slowing down so that she does mostly 50-mile runs and then shorter rests, which seems to be working really, really well for her dogs.
That is awesome, Alex. So we are out of time. She sounds like an extraordinary woman, and I hope that you get to meet her someday, because I think that she's got lots of great ideas to help rural Alaska. So I will send you a copy of the episode. Thank you very much, and I'll be on the air with you again tomorrow night at 7.
All right. Thanks, Michelle.
Take care now. Bye-bye.